house of hunks, honeys, and heffalumps honing handiness. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 203, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your excited exclaimers excavating excellent egg corns.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
I want to start the show off with another fan listener question. I thought it was really good from our page on Facebook. Rachel Lazarin asked us, what fictional universe would you want to be thrown into? And would you be heroes or villains in that universe? While you guys think about it, I'll share what I said. And I thought about it for a long time because I was like, there's so many cool universes I want to be in. But I'm actually really scared of danger. And so anything that poses like a life-threatening danger, I was like, oh, that's cool. But I was like, I kind of don't want to live my life like that.
That's good self-knowledge. That's good. Yeah.
So I want to be a third or fourth tier small-time villain, like a super ridiculous-themed villain in the DC universe, specifically in Gotham City. So I'd be one of those like villains.
You'd be a henchman. A hench person.
I would be like Crazy Quilt. Condiment King.
You
know, the really bad themed villains.
Like
the
Orca. Head of your own crew, but nowhere near like Joker on Batman's radar.
Batman would it hunt you down.
No.
Yeah.
Like I'm just there for flavor text.
But a super villain might try to get you to help support a plan
maybe
that they have.
Yeah, but then they're facing the danger.
Yeah,
I'm just there to maybe, you know, scare people or
get in and push a button.
Yeah. So that's I good. Think.
Huh. I mean, I guess for me, I mean, the obvious answer is Star Wars. Mm. But again, as you say, Karen, there's a lot of danger in that universe.
They just blow up planets without any forewarning in that.
And it's like, you know, if you choose good guy or bad guy, you have a lot of peril. And if you choose neither, then most of the worlds that we've seen is a pretty crummy life, it seems like. You know what? I'm going to say I would go into the Smurfs fictional universe.
Whoa. Would you be a Smurf?
I would be a bad guy, and I would work with Gargamel, because frankly, I want to find out if they do taste
you
good.
You look like his nephew a little bit.
Yeah.
Apprentice.
Yeah.
And he hang out with his cat.
I mean, he's a little abusive.
With Azrael the cat.
Azrael the cat.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, no one's ever really in any mortal danger.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good answer.
I would do Willy Wonka world.
Ooh, I did not think of that.
Because there's not really mortal peril.
Stakes, yeah.
But there is magic, and it's related to candy. I would like to be in the factory after Charlie takes over.
Oh,
not with Willy Wonka.
Now we're going to
the time period.
Yeah, exactly. That's important. Not with Wonka, because he's cutthroat.
Yeah,
that's true. And I feel like that's going to be a stressful life. Did you? I saw on the internet. I thought this was the most. This blew my mind when I saw this on the internet about the Willy Wonka movie, where it was like, did you notice the boat had exactly enough seats for the number of people who were left on the tour? Because he knew that he was going to lose the gloops. He was going to
weed it out.
Yeah, at least two people, the kid and the parent. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Like, I was like, oh, wow, Hogwarts. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, the
people
danger.
Die.
People die and stuff.
I think, I think that you would say post-war Hogwarts.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And, you know,
I mean, first of all, I would say if you want to do that, just go to Universal Studios.
Ooh,
how old would you be? Would you be your age in the Harry Potter world after the war? Or would you be a child?
Would you want to be a student?
We're talking about going back to school and doing, they're wizarding tests and things like
most
that.
Most teachers
but it's
are jerks.
Yeah, that's like it still seems like
I might audit a few classes.
I don't want to go back to any high school, not even wizard high school, right?
Let's not relive that.
Yeah.
You could be the game teacher at Hogwarts.
Oh, I could go and I could teach.
Like not.
Well, what
like they
are,
probably have other
we're
games
a pub
besides
quiz, quiz master at the pub.
We're getting so specific.
This
time period, but after this, but before that,
right.
And I'm in the pub, but I don't go outside, and I have this job.
Cool. Let's just avoid Harry Potter entirely and just go for the safe answer. Obviously, just He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Oh,
that's mortal.
That's you. Yeah.
That's
I mean, depend on.
But I'm not going to be messing with Skeletor or whoever. I'm just going to be hanging out, eating massive turkey legs.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's keto. I think that would be good. There's also some good loincloth. Everybody wears the same loincloth, so you don't have to decide what you're going to wear that day.
Yeah, a lot of topless men cruising around.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. And that's a good universe, because it's a simpler time, and yet they have advanced technology.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right.
I love all of your answers. Very good. Very good. All right, well, thanks, Rachel, for that mind-opening question.
I know. I was like,
without further ado, let's start off with our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz, Hot Shot. And I picked a random Trivial Pursuit card, and this is from a different edition. I'm excited. It is Trivial Pursuit Music Singles.
Oh, okay.
Not like single songs.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I think they're just like one-offs. Anyways.
All right.
Buzzers
but all,
at
all
the
music
ready.
Related.
Yes.
Okay.
Buzzers at the ready. Blue Wedge. What band is the folk rock duo created by Amy Ray and Emily Saliers? Colin.
That is the Indigo Girls.
Correct.
Yeah.
Indigo Girls. They sang a song about Galileo. Mm-hmm. Pink Wedge. Which Shakira song won Record and Song of the Year at the 2006 Latin Grammy Awards?
Oh, is it the Hips Don't Lie song?
No.
Oh, now I have another guess.
Go for it.
Damn. Whenever.
No, it is La Tortura.
What?
So it is Latin Grammys. It is a Spanish language song.
All right, well.
Makes sense.
There you go.
Yellow Edge, what group fronted by Will I Am won 3 awards at the 2006 American Music Awards? Everybody!
Black Eyed Peas.
Can you name the 3 other people in Black Eyed Peas other than Will I Am?
Fergie, Taboo, Apti App.
Yeah. No hesitation.
I saw them in the late 90s, like before they were cool.
Pre-Fergie?
Pre-Fergie. Yeah, they had a few singers.
This was on Pup Trivialized, like, can you name, other than Fergie and Lil' Ann, name one of the other two?
Yeah.
All right, good job. Purple Wedge, what Puerto Rican-born rapper is considered to be the queen of reggaeton?
Oh.
Puerto Rican-born rapper, queen of reggaeton. Man, you know what? This sounds like a familiar question, doesn't it? Anyone else?
No.
I'm just stalling.
I don't know.
I don't have an answer.
It is Ivy Queen.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
All right.
Well, now it's in the punch bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Green Wedge, what former frontman for The Cars helped produce albums for Weezer, Hole, and Bad Religion? I didn't know that. Dana buzzing first.
I think we both had Rick Ocasek.
Rick Ocasek, correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last question, Orange Wedge. What 2002 John Mayer hit about an afternoon tryst won him a Grammy for Best Male Pop Vocal Performance? Dana.
Your Body is a Wonderland.
Correct.
About Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Really?
Is that
she
true?
Was in the video. She was in the video.
Okay.
But they did date around then, so maybe.
Your body is like a theme park.
Yeah, it's weird, huh?
Yeah.
It makes you want to throw up. You eat too much popcorn.
Ride spinny rides. The zipper.
After a short time, you want to leave.
Your body is a traveling carnival. Your body is a tilt-a-whirl.
Your body is a sack of clams.
After we were done, I couldn't find my car.
So where is it? Beep, 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 beep. It's so dark.
Your body is a rigged ring toss game.
Oh, my God.
Your body is a fried Oreo.
Your body is a what I've seen once was, and had, was at the Salt Lake City. It was the Utah State Fair. I was there, you know, for a race, but just happened to be State Fair season. And it was a cheese stuffed hot dog wrapped around a whole dill pickle.
Wait. I'm sorry. Hold on.
Whoa.
A hot dog wrapped around?
Encasing. So here, concentric.
Okay.
Inside. Cheese.
Okay.
Next layer. Hot dog all around. Wow. Next layer. A whole pickle all around.
So the hot dog was in the pickle.
Yes. Yeah.
They hollowed out the pickle
to put the hot dog with the cheese.
I was imagining a spear wrapped around it.
No. It was a whole dill pickle.
Oh my God.
Dipped in corn batter.
What?
Like corn dog batter, yeah. And then deep fried.
Did you try it?
No. I did.
I would try yeah. it.
It's not bad. It's really hard to eat.
You don't say.
Yeah. It's like a burrito.
Because none of those layers cohere with each other. Yeah, too. Yeah. Like you take one bite, and then there's like six layers of right. cheesy
you get,
pickle
you get
and
cheese
yeah.
pouring out. There's a surprising amount of pickle.
You need like a fun pickle.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, I really underestimated the contribution of the pickle to this. Yeah.
Hot oh, pickle man. Juice.
Your body is.
Scalding
corn dog pickles.
Yeah.
Cheese stuff. All right. Well, today's episode, Colin, what's our theme?
Oh, our theme for today is The Great Escape.
Ooh.
Escapes. I was watching a prison movie. Just one of many, many. We don't need to get too into it. It may be on a quiz that one of you have in the show.
Oh, I see.
I was watching a prison movie, and if you're watching a movie that's set in prison, there's a better than average chance it's going to be about someone trying to escape from that prison.
Yep.
And I got to thinking like, oh, escape. What a perfect topic that would be for our show. Of all its varieties, yeah. Escape artists, escaping from prison, fleeing from whatever justice. Scenario you're trapped oh, yeah. in. So, yeah, I thought that would be a good world for us to explore or get away from.
This week we're busting out The Great Escape!
As soon as you hear the word escape, you're going to think Harry Houdini. You can't have an escape show without talking at least a little bit about it.
You're like a big Harry Houdini fan.
I was, you know, this has been exaggerated, I think, over the years.
Oh,
but
okay.
I mean, we have talked about, I think, on this show.
Yes.
I think we even tweeted out a photograph maybe at some point.
Yes.
Of me in seventh grade dressed up as Harry Houdini for the Wax Museum, which is the ridiculous thing that they did in seventh grade where they made us all dress up like historical figures and do research on them. But then literally stand there stock still as parents and siblings would come walking through the gym witnessing you having to just stand there. Yeah, it didn't make any sense.
They didn't want to do any more plays.
Apparently not. But yeah, I was Harry Houdini. And so I did a lot of reading about Harry Houdini. Fascinating guy. I talked about
Houdini.
Him extensively on the show on Good Job Brain before in his capacity as a myth buster. He was a devoted skeptic.
Anti-occult, yeah.
Indeed. In an era in which a lot of people were like, oh yeah, you know, psychics Facts. And seances are totally real and stuff. And he really wanted to bust that up. His day job, as it were. He was a magician, but he focused on a lot of escape routines and things of that nature. Houdini was a big mythbuster when it came to like seances and things like that, but he was also totally okay with letting people believe that he himself was always totally on the up and up with his escape routines, right? So I wanted to just talk about like three of Houdini's escape routines, things that he would do in public. What he would do is, so this is, by the way, this is all kind of like turn of the century, 1900s, 1910s, 20s, 30s. He died in the 30s. So he'd come into town and it would be Harry Houdini is going to be performing at such and such a theater tomorrow night. But before he would do that, he would do some kind of display in public as a way of getting attention, as a way of advertising. Mm-hmm. And so that's when he would do some of these escapes and, you know, people would crowd around and they'd say, you know, sometimes he'd have like 50,000 people watching him do this stuff. One of the things that he would do was the milk can escape.
Yeah.
Where they would take a milk can, which is a sort of like a jug about half the height of a human being, you know, maybe a little bit taller than that. A man could fit in one of these things and he'd duck down inside of it, but they'd actually, first they'd fill it with water. So they'd fill it up with water.
In the canister.
Yeah, in the canister. And he'd get into a canister full of water and then they'd put the lid on it. By the time they're putting the lid on this thing, it's, as far as you can tell, full of water, and he's submerged inside this thing.
Okay.
And put the lid on, and they use padlocks to padlock the lid on this thing, and then they chuck it in the lake. And then prior to this, they'd have people come up and inspect it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So it's yeah. no tricks.
Yeah.
False panels.
You could look at it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, reassure yourself that there was nothing, you know, no trickery with this milk can. Houdini would get inside. They'd lock it up. Remember, it's full of water, so he's already holding his breath. Then they'd put it in the lake. And then Houdini would come to the surface and he'd get out of this milk can. Yes. The way that this worked was that the milk can, the sort of the neck of the can, it looked like it was riveted on, but it wasn't. Imagine the neck of a human being the neck of the canister, right? It's loose in there, basically, but if you try to grab it and pull it up, just pull the collar, basically, of this milk can out, you can't do it. They'd grease it up and you wouldn't be able to get enough purchase on it to get it out by pulling up on it. But Houdini, when he was inside the can, could just push up on it.
Oh.
Once the cap was bolted on, just push up on the top of the from the bottom of the cap, and then it would just slide right out.
With all the bolts and everything.
With all the
bolts
and everything on it. Right. Now, was he holding his breath? Yeah. Houdini could hold his breath for a long time. That was absolutely true. So by the time that they submerged him in water, he was holding his breath. It would take like a minute or two for them to even put him in the lake in the first place. We had to hold his breath for a long time. Then after holding his breath for a long time, had to just push up on the thing. But once you had the leverage to just push up on it, the thing would just pop right off.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So that was a gimmick. Handcuffs. Houdini would escape from handcuffs.
Yeah.
Not just any handcuffs. He would say to the people in the town, come in, would tell the police to give me a pair of handcuffs and put them on me and I will escape from them. First of all, if you gave him a crappy pair of handcuffs, he knew exactly. He studied handcuffs, right?
Yeah.
For years
Model
and years.
Make.
There's only so many handcuffs out there.
Yeah.
So he might know where to just slam the thing against the ground to get the spring to pop and to get the handcuffs to open.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
He might know how to pick the lock using whatever lock picks concealed on his person, you know, to pick the standard pair of handcuffs. Because there's only so many standard pairs of handcuffs. He had a belt with all the keys on it.
Yeah. Man!
Asking for the police cuffs is actually pretty smart, because it actually narrows down to a more standardized set.
And then there was this gimmick, which is this is the best part. So if somebody brought him a totally bespoke pair of handcuffs, where he doesn't have a key to these handcuffs on him, they're super big, so they're not cheap and he can't just pop them, he would say, well, I have to examine the key. I must examine the key to these handcuffs. So at this point, he would take the key for examination, looking at it, and his assistant would go into the back where he had a buttload of other keys in all shapes and sizes. And they'd find the one that looks the closest to the key, take that, get it to Houdini. Houdini would say, okay, I've inspected the key. Hand the person back the fake key while Houdini still has the real key.
Wow.
That's
then
good.
Just unlock it that way. So that's just, that's a magic trick. That's
misdirection.
That's part escape artistry actually doing it, but also part that is just straight
smart.
Up a magic
trick. Yeah, man.
But the thing that Houdini is absolutely most known for is his ability to escape a straight jacket. I may have mentioned this before on the show. I mean, it's really interesting, but this is the thing that he would do and draw crowds. Straitjacket is something that they would use to restrain prisoners, and basically just imagine a jacket that goes on backwards and the sleeves are super long and your arms don't come out of them and the sleeves are like closed up.
It's like you're giving yourself a hug.
Take those sleeves and forcibly wrap your arms around you with those sleeves and tie them off in the back so you're giving yourself a hug. Houdini basically came up with the method. I mean, there's just a sort of standard method for escaping these, but the thing is, he would say, and to make it even more difficult on myself, I'm going to escape this while I'm upside down.
Yeah.
And they'd tie, you know, rope to his legs and hoist him up on a crane, and he'd be dangling, the spectacle of him dangling up, you know, against the side of a building. By the way, Houdini, if he had his choice of venue for this when he came into the town, would make sure that he was hung up right next to the newspaper's office. Lots of videos out there that it's like right next to the office of the Houston Chronicle.
Wow.
He's not doing this for fun.
Yeah.
It's for publicity.
Marketing.
Yes.
Yep.
The process was twofold. The first thing was, when they were putting the straitjacket on him, Houdini would use a whole bunch of techniques to give himself a whole lot of space inside the straitjacket. You know, as they're sort of wrapping his arms, you know, you can sort of hold some of the cloth and pinch it inwards. And then when you let go, now you have a lot more slack. He'd make sure to fold his arms over, like not put one arm more towards his head and one arm more towards, you know, his feet, but to actually fold his arms over.
Stack his arms up.
Yeah. And so then when he moves his arms, he has more slack. So you want to basically make it so when they're putting the jacket, also take a huge breath. Expand your body. Make it as big, your chest as big as you possibly can to give yourself more space and slack to work with. Then, once the jacket is on, he would take his stronger arm, his right arm. Basically, you just need to get one arm up over your head because then you can untangle the sleeves and get your sleeve in front of you. And so once you do that, then it's just a matter of getting all the belts undone. So you want to give yourself as much slack as possible so that you can get one arm up over your head. Hanging upside down... Turns out that it's easier. Actually a lot easier.
You have gravity.
You have gravity pulling down your whole body. So to get your arm over your head, all your bones are sort of being pulled down. So it's way easier when you're suspended upside down to get your hand over your head in the straitjacket.
And when you're, it also probably masks all the wriggling and, you know, clutching.
He's thrashing around and he's dangling and he's going left and right and it looks amazing. There's a little bit of trickery in terms of giving yourself as much slack as possible and the methods by which you might do that. But like a lot of it was just, you know, practicing this series of moves and being able to get out of it.
Yeah.
Mental focus too of just to stay calm and not panic.
So I actually was watching a documentary on this and my favorite people, Penn and Teller, popped up and they had Penn Jillette explaining and he was just like, a straitjacket is meant to restrain somebody that is not in a good state of mind. And so if you have to have a straitjacket put on you, you are probably not going to be methodical enough to be able to execute a series of precise moves in order to get yourself.
Right.
You're just like thrashing and like,
It's not Hannibal Lecter. It's not.
Hannibal Lecter.
He probably could.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I'm saying that's like you're not dealing with him.
You're not going to be Hannibal Lecter. Right. Oh, can I revise my fictional world?
You want to go?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I want to be Silence of the Lambs, but I want to be him.
Oh, you want to be him? Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. I have a quiz for you guys about escape-themed movies.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote it in the middle of the night. I called it Escapist Escapades, subtitled Stephen King is the Master of Writing Stories About Escaping from Places That Later Become Movies, and a couple of other non-Stephen King movies.
It's a long quiz name.
So your hint is there are a lot of Stephen King King movies in this quiz. Let's do buzzers.
All right.
Buzzers ready. First question, a non-Stephen King one. Harold and Kumar escape from here in the sequel to Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Colin.
I think we all know it, but it's Guantanamo Bay.
Yes.
Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
Where were they originally going?
I've seen that one once years ago. Mm. Where were they originally going?
Amsterdam.
Which
makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense for Harold and Kumar.
A young Elizabeth Moss starred in this TV movie based on a 1975 film based on a novel.
TV movie based on a film based on a novel.
Yeah.
Carrie.
No.
Wait, do we know it's Stephen King or not Stephen King?
No.
This one is not Stephen King.
No,
this
I was just, a, I don't know.
I'm front loading the not Stephen King.
Is this sci-fi?
Fantasy, and this is a young Elizabeth Moss.
So, like teenage or younger child, even maybe.
Right. Hmm. And it's about escape. It's in the title.
Escape from which mountain?
Yes.
That has been made into so many things. It was a novel, and then
the movie.
I didn't know there was a TV movie. Jeez.
I had it just about the original movie, and then I was like, Elizabeth Moss.
What?
That's a good one. Tale?
Yeah. Mel Gibson is one of the stars of this farm animal themed 2000 animated movie.
Oh, I remember. Oh, Colin.
Is that, it's the chicken one, right? Chicken Run?
Chicken Run. Okay. Yeah.
I thought I was like, Chicken Little. Like, no,
trying to escape from the
barn.
The chicken processing factory.
I understand their motivation.
This film starring Paul Newman popularized the line, "What we've got here is a failure to communicate."
I believe that is Cool Hand Luke.
Cool Hand Luke. With the boss with the silver mirrored glasses.
It's the prototypical Southern chain gang. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so as English as my second language, I know there's cool as a cucumber and then there's Cool Hand Luke. And sometimes I would get them mixed up in my head. And I think it's either cool as a cucumber is Cool Hand Luke or the vice versa. I was like, oh yeah, the cucumber movie starring
I just think of it as the hard boiled egg movie because he like has that contest where he has to prove a point. He eats so many of them.
Cool Hand Lucumber.
That's where that line, respect my authority, comes from. Okay, this 1981 sci-fi action film written and directed by John Carpenter. It has a state in the name.
Oh, it's about escapes?
Yes.
Oh, that is Escape from New York. Oh.
Escape from New York. That's set in futuristic 1997.
Yeah.
When the president crashes into Manhattan, now a giant maximum security prison, a convicted bank robber is sent to rescue him.
And then later he goes to the other coast of the country.
Yeah, Escape from L.A. One more non-Stephen King question, and then the Stephen King floodgates will open. Escape from Tomorrow is a horror film shot on location at this unique spot. Karen.
There are two spots, actually. Yeah. It was shot in Orlando, Florida, and in Anaheim, California, because it was shot in the Tomorrowland of Disney World, or Magic Kingdom, and Disneyland.
That's right. It was a guerrilla movie shoot. Because Disney doesn't usually let people do that, and so I guess they didn't even ask if they could do it.
That's the idea.
That was that's part of like the big marketing hype is just the dude was so scared of Disney. I mean, he did something not so cool, but then he was like editing the movie in another country just in case.
He did it in South Korea. The actors had their scripts on their cell phones, and they were using like handheld family style video cameras to shoot it so nobody would notice that they were making a movie.
Have you guys all seen it?
I haven't seen it.
I'm too scared. I'm a little bit scared.
All right. Now we're entering the Stephen King.
Elevator opens and blood gushes out.
In this 1987 film, Arnold Schwarzenegger's character must survive a public execution gauntlet staged as a game show.
I don't know.
What is that? It's the Running Man.
The Running Man.
Actually, Dana, I believe that was written by Richard Bachman.
Loosely based on a novel by Stephen King, Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
He still exists as Stephen King.
Yes.
What's his legal name?
Well, he's Stephen King. That was just one That's of his. That was.
Oh, okay. So,
his Richard, name.
Yeah. So Richard Bachman is a fake name.
That's right.
Stephen King is not the fake name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh.
James Caan is held prisoner by Kathy Bates, the original in this film based on a Stephen King novel. Karen.
Misery.
This 1994 film based on a Stephen King novella was nominated for 7 Academy Awards.
94. Oh.
Everybody.
The Shawshank Redemption. Oh, but also prison. Also prison movie. Yeah.
But that was an escape, though.
It's true.
Right.
And that was like prison. Wait, what were you saying?
Yeah. What were you going to say?
The Green Mile, but I was like, oh yeah, Shawshank.
Shawshank.
Yeah. Shawshank. I love that movie.
It's been the number one movie on IMDb's user-generated top 250 since 2008.
Yeah, it's been on the number one for a long time.
For 10 years now. Yeah. Good job, you guys. There were more movies by Stephen King, and I was like, am I writing a whole Stephen King quiz? And then, nah. But
I have a fact. It's not a segment. Every time we record, I forget that I've learned this fact, and then I never, like, it's been like months, it's like years now. Finally, I was like, oh, this kind of fits, and I wrote it down. And I was like, I'm gonna share this fact. So, for people who lose weight, how does fat leave your body? Do you know?
How does it escape the body?
How does it leave your, like, when, say you,
I,
someone loses, you probably know, but like, when you lose 60 pounds, where did the 60 pounds go?
Oh, how does it pass out of your body? Yeah. Oh, I mean, not just like burned as heat. I see what you're saying. I'm not sure.
I thought it was they shrink down, but
That's what I thought too. But I guess I was naive.
They actually asked this question to a lot of diet coach and stuff. People had mistruths basically. Some people say, "Oh, converts into muscle, like the cells become muscle." Some people are like, "Oh, you poop it out."
Well, so that's what people think. It's like you poop.
You breathe it out.
Yep.
You breathe it out.
Its vast majority is it gets broken down and leaves as carbon dioxide.
Really?
So 84%. So say if you lose 10 pounds, 84% of that is breathed out and 16% of that is water.
I did not know that.
By sweat.
Oh, sure.
But you breathe out.
Fat breath.
Yeah, fat breath.
Well, so I admit when we were first brainstorming topics for this episode, like I was sure Karen was going to talk about what I'm going to talk about in a minute here because it's animal based. And I know you love animals, Karen.
I sometimes feel like I do too much.
I understand. Yeah, no, I get it. I feel you. I was watching a video. It's on YouTube. It's from a couple years ago, but it's, have you seen this guy? The guy finds this huge octopus.
Oh, on his boat.
On his boat, right. And then, you know, he's kind and then you see the octopus squeeze through an opening. I mean, it looks like as if like an elephant escaped through a coffee cup, you know? It's like, you're like, oh my goodness, how does it do that? I don't know. I just got, so I fell down a whole rabbit hole of octopus escapes.
They are amazing animals.
What's that?
Not an octopus hole?
Sounds like a different thing.
Yeah, shut your octopus hole. No, I mean, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, like, us as trivia fans, and I know we read a lot, but they're smart. I mean, just octopuses in general, and the entire family of animal, they are.
Like, oh, we're smart, but they're smart.
Yeah. I'm starting a new podcast, actually, with three octopuses. Man, they're keeping me on my toes. Yeah. But I mean, like, they're
ironic.
This is a whole separate topic on its own. Like, we're really just finding out just really how smart they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, they may have active internal lives, you know, I mean, internal thoughts, and it's getting, it's really people who work with and research and study octopuses. Octopodes, if you prefer. I'm going to say octopuses. They all say, like, no, man, these things, they know what's going on. There's a story about a researcher who was feeding the octopus not fresh food, basically store-bought octopus food, you know. Not really.
Like, you get it Safeway.
You go down to the pet store.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say store-bought, but prepared, let's say. And, you know, the octopus wants to catch fresh food. And so the researcher comes up to the tank, and the octopus, while making eye contact, takes the old food and is shoving it down the drain of the tank that he's in, as if to say, here's what I think if you're not fresh food. Yeah. It's a little uncanny.
Sassy.
Yeah, how smart they are. And so in addition to not just physically being able to get their bodies into, you know, tight holes, because they're all muscle, they're almost all muscle. They're smart enough to plan escapes, and they're smart enough to really wait. They're smart enough to plan their moment, take advantage of a moment, and then use their extremely weird physical gifts to escape.
Half of the escape is like the physical execution, but you need the strategy and tactics for the other first 50%.
So, you know, you might read, so there's stories of like, oh, you know, the octopus got out of the tank, like lifted the tank up and popped it off. And you might think like, okay, well, even like a really strong fish, a snake could do that as well, right? There are, you can go find videos of these. Octopuses can figure out how to unscrew lids.
Oh, yeah.
So there are, again, researchers have they screw the lid on, and the octopus in,
the suction cups.
They've got the suction cups. They're very dexterous. They can really manipulate, but they mentally can have the conception of, oh, it twists on in this direction.
Right.
Wow. And I have to unscrew the lid from the inside in a very specific way and get out. Mm. So I've got two stories here of octopus escape that I just want to just quickly share with you guys. Coincidentally, or maybe not coincidentally, they're both from New Zealand. Which, I mean, I maybe it's not so coincidental, meaning they do a lot of octopus research there. So this was an incident from just a couple years ago, 2016, of Inky the octopus.
Okay.
What a dumb name.
I gotta say, if it was clearly not put up for an internet vote, because it would be like, you know, Inky McInkface if it wasn't.
Right.
Inky's tank mate was named Blotchy.
All right.
It does sound like maybe some children came up with these names.
Yeah.
No. It was a PhD.
Marine biologist. Yeah.
It's short for Inkfirth, actually.
Yeah.
Inkfirth. Inkington.
Yeah. This was at the National Aquarium. The story of Inky's escape is almost like told in a forensic, like they had to reconstruct what happened.
Wow.
Cause he made it. He's gone. Like Inky's left, man. He was caught in the wild. So they don't know exactly how old he is. He wasn't born in the lab. okay. So he'd already had some, you know, street smarts.
Yeah,
exactly. Some water smarts. Basically, his researchers came into the lab one day, found he was missing from the tank. Looking around, can't find him.
Look.
There's a wet streak across the floor, suction cup marks on the floor.
Okay.
8 feet away in the lab, okay? So there's a wet streak 8 feet away to a tiny little drain pipe. All right, now the opening to the drain pipe is just about, I don't know, 4 inches across, five inches across. And that drain pipe leads out to the ocean.
Whoa.
And what Inky did... is Inky knew this drain pipe.
Exactly. Would they take their chances when it goes to the trash?
Yeah. They came back. So they came in one morning, found there was a tiny, tiny little crack in the top of the tank. Inky had pushed out, worked his way down the side of the tank, crawled across the floor. And again, I want to emphasize waiting until there's nobody in the lab.
Yeah.
They're aware of like, oh, they're smart enough. I'm going to get caught. Inched his way across the hole, squeezed his way into the drain hole, and then out to the ocean at large. Yeah. And they had to kind of come in and piece together.
What I was hoping for was that he left the squishy trail to the drain pipe, but that was a red herring.
Yeah, that he dried his tentacles.
When the two of them were looking in the drain pipe, that's when he came out and walked out the front door.
By taking their car keys.
And their badge. Their ID badge.
Right, I think Inky stole my car.
I love the image of him getting in the car and all at once, one tentacle's adjusting the rearview mirror, one tentacle is getting the seat adjusted, the other one's
finding
popping.
Dory.
So just gone. And it made the news, of course, in New Zealand, and then ultimately got picked up by the wire services around the world. The Octa News.
Have a video camera. That would have been amazing to watch.
Security cam.
Oh, I mean, I
would have disabled it.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
They're like, wait, this is on loop.
I'm gonna squirt in some ink.
This is all
it's all name.
Really. It's a fake tape. It's a reconstructed lab.
They're like loops in a weird way.
So speaking of tape,
say Bellagio.
Exactly. This is from 8 months ago. Yeah. There is a story. There was another octopus who the researchers kept coming in the morning, and the lights over the tank would be shorted out and worked out. And basically, they did a little video busting of the thing, and what found out is that the octopus would come up and intentionally squirt water up at the lights just to like didn't like him or whatever. He's like, I'm gonna take care of these lights and put them out. They have a lot of agency. Good. They have a lot of agency.
It kind of freaks me out a little.
He's fighting the lights.
Another incident in New Zealand. This was at the end of 2008 into 2009. This was at an aquarium in Dunedin, maybe. Yeah. Dana is our resident New Zealand expert, yeah?
That's the way I've heard it before.
We'll go with that. This was an octopus named Sid. And Sid was in the aquarium for about 6 months. And I guess it was in octopus terms kind of old. So the senior aquarist came into the aquarium one morning and Sid's gone. So looking around, can't find him anywhere. And unlike the other lab, there's no drain that leads out to the ocean or anything like that. Looking in cabinets, and apparently, like in the octopus researcher community, it's like, oh yeah, you got to look everywhere. They can crawl inside a bucket.
They can
crawl inside something and pull the door shut behind them, and they can just be like hiding there.
They just need to baby-proof their labs. They know.
5 days later, found Sid had...
Alive?
Alive.
Okay.
Had gotten into a drainage system that he didn't have open access to, was blocked, just was basically holding himself in there whenever people would come by. I mean, again, we can't really get inside his mind, but they were looking everywhere for him, and he was hiding out in the tube, and they think that he was trying to escape out a door, and just knew that he was going to get caught, just plugged himself up in the drain and just had the sense to hang out there and like, no, I can't be seen out in the open.
Like that scene in The Fugitive.
Exactly. Just living there for 5 days. So they put him back. And a few weeks later, they found the door open again to his tank. They found him hiding again somewhere in their lab. So he made several more attempts at escaping. Sometimes even when they were people there, like he was pretty brazen. They would come in to clean it and he would try and escape. I guess, his species of octopus, they try to mate when it reaches the end of their lifespan.
Are they that unhappy?
Yeah. Okay. So they were thinking like, oh, you know what? He's probably trying to mate and get back to the water. Yeah. So they took pity on poor Sid and they decided to release him back to the wild.
Good.
So this is quoting from an independent article is, yesterday afternoon, Mr. Crane, the aquarium supervisor. he goes, well, you know, the British publications are very formal. Yeah.
Mr. Crane, they acknowledge his agents.
Yesterday afternoon, Mr. Crane transferred Sid to a plastic bucket and carried him to the water's edge 300 yards away. Even during that short walk, Sid was trying to lift the lid off the bucket. He was like, the whole time, he's like, let me out, I'm gonna escape. And then he was dumped in the ocean. They said they watched him swim away, and he was a good, healthy color, and he was quite happy. And so, yeah, he became, in the New Zealand press anyway, he was Sid the lovesick octopus. I'm never gonna keep an octopus as a pet, because it sounds
of course these are labs and, you know, doing research and stuff.
They're not holding him to eat them, or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, man.
They're amazing, amazing creatures. And they will flee if you give them half a chance.
And speaking about escapes, my favorite escape is probably traveling. I love traveling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And of course, traveling to far places in airplanes. And we've had a segment before about airport codes, Colin. Yes. It was your quiz.
Yeah.
I love airport quote. They're so, for the ones that you find out the origin, why is this airport code not like the city name, and you kind of read about it.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about this in a previous episode. But I found out another interesting thing about air trafficking in airports and airplanes traveling. There are waypoints in the sky, in the air, basically along a route, and that's when the plane will maybe turn a little or go down, you know, or up or go down. So those are kind of the fixed points.
Standardized.
Especially important in arrival or departure procedures of planes landing or taking off. So you have a whole procedure like, okay, you're this plane and you have to go to this next checkpoint, this next checkpoint, this next checkpoint. Or like if you're about to land, hit this checkpoint. If you're going to do this runway, then you have to kind of follow this route with these points. And that's where you turn the plane and you descend and whatnot. All of them have 5-letter names.
Interesting.
This is the important thing, and I want to credit Captain Ken Hoke, whose article I stumbled upon, talking about these airway waypoints. They're called fixes, so the points are called fixes. How these names come to be, the local FAA for their airspace will suggest names, and there's like a larger central aeronautical information management that kind of approves them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to be pronounceable, they have to be unique, obviously, and can't be controversial or, you know, that's a bad word.
Yeah, okay. Right.
And the fun part of this is that depending on where you are, they theme it. They theme it to the place. A lot of air traffic controllers, they have a sense of humor. They really come up with things that might spell out a sentence.
All right.
Or they're unique to, the location or the city or the airspace that they're in. I've compiled some interesting ones. And what I'm going to do is quiz you guys. I'm going to read out 5-letter fixed names.
All right.
And you tell me where you think it is.
Okay.
So the pen and paper, you can write down the place, but also to help you if you want to write down the letters as I'm reading it back to you.
Okay.
All right. So first one, there are two of them. HAVRD. Second was YAARD. HAVRD. YAARD. Where do you think these waypoints, these fixes are located? What city? Answers up. Chris, you said Cambridge, Massachusetts. Dana says Boston. Colin says Cambridge, Massachusetts, Boston. It is that area. Yes, I'm looking for Boston. Cambridge is fine. Havid Yad. Havid Yad. All right, next fixed point, I'm going to give you one. LeBrn. LeBrn. All right. Answers up. Chris says Cleveland. Dana says Ohio, Cleveland. Colin says Cleveland, Ohio. You are correct. LeBron. There's also different variants of different Cleveland sports.
I am proud of myself for getting a sports one.
You know what? Let's take a step back. Let's take a step back.
Shaky. I was like, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I think it's Cleveland.
No, let's. Well done.
Thank you. Of course, well named after LeBron James, King James, who plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
He's a good basketball man.
Yeah, he is. He plays the basketball. next one, I'm going to give you two fixed names. You tell me the city. HKUNA. HKUNA. And the second one is MTATA. MTATA.
And
okay. We have to write down a city?
A city.
Okay. Ooh, man. Ooh. All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Chris says Orlando. Dana says Orlando.
I was thinking Colin too. Nairobi.
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 No, Orlando. Like, Orlando is probably more.
It is Orlando.
Yeah, no. I was like, what city in Africa? Africa is for sure not a.
It's like, why would they care about Disney's marketing?
Hakuna Matata. Also in MCO, Orlando's airport, there's also Piglet, Tigger, Jasmine, Jafar are all. Waypoint names. Funny. So as you're, and also they have Looney Tunes and Universal characters as well. Goodness. So as you're a plane and you're descending next time into Orlando's airport, every of those fixes has like the Piglet procedure
now
of landing.
Now passing through Piglet.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Piglet. I was going to broadcast that over
the PA. I know. United used to have that channel where you can listen to the pilot's air control. Air traffic control. I don't think they have it anymore. That'd be funny. That'd be really funny.
Now approaching Piglet.
Next one. Tell me the city or the area. I'm going to give you two. First one, MAKRZ. MAKRZ. The next one, MAARK. MAARK.
The city, huh?
City. Or area. I mean, there's a smaller city and there's a larger city, and larger city would be easier.
Oh. Guess.
All right, answers up. Chris says Kentucky. Dana says Nashville. Colin says
Louisville? But then Kentucky.
Yeah.
Louisville is correct.
Kentucky
is
the city.
Yep. Maker's Mark or Macker's Mark. Also in that area, there's barrel, mash, distill, and bourbon.
That's good.
Maker's Mark, of course, famous Kentucky bourbon.
Yes. So basically, these all sound like wonderful startup names.
When you read them, it does. They look so funny.
Totally.
All right. And of course, we're getting harder as we go.
This is great. Okay. I had no idea.
It's so interesting.
I had no idea. This is fantastic.
All right. I'm going to give you three. First one, T-Y-D-Y-E. That's T-Y-D-Y-E.
Okay.
Next one, G-R-T-F-L. G-R-T-F-L. And the third one, if you didn't get it yet, D-E-D-H-D. D-E-D-H-D. What city can you find these in? I'll wait for Chris. All right, answers up. Chris says Berkeley. Dana says San Francisco. And Colin, you said San Francisco. It is San Francisco. SFO. Yes. Yeah. Tie-dye, grateful, and dead.
Head.
Deadhead.
Deadhead.
Yep.
Named after the famous San Francisco band. All right, next one. What city? G-I-N-I-S.
Wait, say that one more time.
G-I-N-I-S.
Okay.
To me, they're just like license plate, like vanity, when you're trying to like sound it out.
That's all we get.
G-I-N-I-S.
And it's a city?
Yes.
Huh. She did say they're getting harder.
All right. Answers up. Chris says Dublin. Data says
Cape Canaveral.
Cape Canaveral. And Colin, you said London. It is Dublin.
Guinness.
Yeah. I was like genies. Like I dream of genie.
Guinness. That makes much more sense.
All right. All right. Last one. Give you three.
Okay.
First one. FRZZN. FRZZN. Next one. TNDRA. TNDRA. And the third one.
I don't even need it.
FAVRE. FAVRE. Three waypoints, three fixes in this general city, located above this general city. I guess cities can own
the airspace.
I'm not sure.
Answers up. Chris says, don't know. Dana says, Antarctica. And Colin says, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Colin is right. Frozen tundra.
Sure.
And Brett Favre.
So that was a sports one where I was like, I don't know, Frozen tundra, maybe Antarctica.
The Lambeau Field where the Packers play, it's for years and years, it's the stock phrase is the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. And it's just like, it's like a stock phrase at this point. Yeah.
Baseball.
It is. Football. It is. Yeah.
And then, one last one's not a quiz. It's just, I thought it was funny. Copenhagen, one of the fixed points is called It Sucks. But like, I don't think someone named it because like ITSUX. I think maybe they're just like, you know, something to say.
But I hope so.
But just see it in all, because they're all in all caps. It's just like, It Sucks.
That's really cool. Yeah. That's a great bit of trivia.
And you know, one last thing. What I did was I looked up all our names also to see if cities our names fall above.
Well, you and I have five letter names.
Yes. me too.
You're right.
I have a short one.
So Dana, I use D-A-N-A-H.
Okay.
Okay. Dana, but like Dana.
Dana.
In Dana Point, Orange County, California, USA. And then Chris, you are in you are above Sheldonville, Nebraska.
Wow.
Wow, I got a good one. Chris.
That's
not like Christmas Island.
Colin, you have Erica, Virginia.
Okay.
And then, look, it's really fun.
Seems like that would be Erica.
Well, Erica could be.
Yeah.
You know, because they're multiple.
Oh, okay, got
it. They're multiple fixed points for an area. Okay. Multiple. Okay. So it could be, you know, one. And then, and Karen is in Benefit, North Carolina.
That's a nice
name. Yeah. There you go.
I like this.
I encourage everybody to go look up, see your name or your last name or spell different things and see what's available.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And we got one last escape segment. I don't know what you're going
to
do, but...
Well, immediately what jumped to my head was... Okay, so, I mean, Karen, you and I... there's a dividing line in the Good Job Brain.
There is a dividing line.
There's people who do not play escape rooms, and there's people who play a lot of escape rooms.
Like a lot.
Like a whole lot.
Like so,
Karen,
all of them.
You and I love to play escape rooms.
We have our own hardcore team.
I had no idea that escape rooms would become this popular. I mean, of course, there's many, many, many different kinds of escape rooms, but they generally all boil down to you and a team are put into a room, and you have to solve puzzles with the things in that room in order to, in general, you solve some final puzzle that will give you a key that lets you escape the room. Once you get outside of the room.
Literally let you open the door.
I mean, no matter where you go, there's probably an escape room in that city, even if it's a small city in the United States. There's probably one or more or 20 different escape rooms that you can go and do anywhere.
Virtually all the knowledge I have about escape rooms has come from you guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've done it a couple times, but I'm not hardcore like you guys.
But Colin, you have just been like,
no,
not my thing.
It's one of those things where I almost would like it too much. Like, I think I would get frustrated by it. I mean, Karen and I talked about that before. sure. Yeah. But it's, maybe, you know what? You know, now that I'm a dad, you know, my tastes are changing.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never seen you frustrated by anything. So that's why I'm like, really?
So, and no, I would have to imagine that there's a lot of Good Job Brain listeners out there who do escape rooms or might be thinking about doing escape rooms. Or I feel like it would be a nice idea to pass down to you guys some of the escape room tips that we have learned or had to learn the hard way in our time doing escape rooms. So here we go, your Good Job Brain escape room tips segment. I'm going to break this down into a few categories. First category being before you even start the escape room. Number one, don't get drunk beforehand. A lot of people think, oh, well, yeah, let's do some pre-gaming. Let's have some drinks before we go in. It's fun.
Hanging out with friends.
Yeah, you're not going to have a good time. This is asking you to actually, like, do puzzles and test, you know, your mental ability. Like, you don't want to
cloud it.
And usually, if not always, under a timer, too, right?
Under a timer. Yeah, exactly.
And that does, it's more like a sport. Like, you wouldn't drink a bunch before you play basketball.
You're really supposed to be, you have to be organized and methodical to do these. Like, and you're not organized and methodical. So don't do that. It's probably not a good idea. Drink after. Whether you win or lose, you'll want to go and drink, so just do it then. Consider having a team. Consider getting, you know, a bunch of friends together. I mean, the first time I ever did an escape room, it's like a few of us bought tickets for the room. Then they put us in with six strangers. And it's, you need to be a functioning team to solve these things.
Yeah.
And you can't do that when you're
That was a big barrier. Because then you get kind of harped on like, oh, I don't want to yell at these people.
You don't want to yell at, you have to, it has to be people you're okay with yelling at. I'm fine with yelling at Karen. You know what I mean?
Like,
but I would, but
you don't want to be the overcompetitive jerk with somebody who's just there to have a good time.
It's going
to
be best if you book the entire room for just you and your group and find a group. Make a Facebook group. Get all your friends involved. Figure out that kind of thing. You know, meet up beforehand, especially if you haven't done a whole lot of escape rooms and if there are people who have done them, but there's people who haven't. Mm-hmm. You know, get together like an hour beforehand and talk and share and like, you know, strategize and go down the list of, you know, general good rules and tips and things like that, just so everybody's kind of on the same page as far as what's going to happen. You can't anticipate. The idea is you don't know what's in there, but like, you know, just talk about it beforehand. Also, schedule some time for afterwards, whether you go out drinking or not. Like, everybody's going to want to debrief. Everybody's going to want to talk about it.
That's the fun part.
So schedule that time for afterwards. Do puzzles outside of escape rooms, you know, like learn how to do puzzles and things like that, because even if that exact puzzle is not in the exact room, being able to think in terms of puzzles.
This is advice for becoming a championship level escape room team.
Right.
Imagining my parents being this hardcore and they would not be able to be.
We like to win. You see the pieces and you go, oh, I know what this is. Mm. Or you'll be able to look at something and be like, oh, this is going to be a Sudoku board. It's all filled in. That kind of a thing. Yeah. So once you get in there, timer starts. Again, all escape rooms are different, but like in general, the first thing you want to do is search the room thoroughly. Search the room. You want to look up high and you want to look way down low.
If it's not bolted down, pick it thoroughly. Up.
Well, they usually have rules. They're like, okay, the furniture is not part of the room. So please don't flip over the couch.
Please don't unscrew the table.
Like,
rules.
You have to break open this IKEA furniture and there's a clue inside the screw ball. You know, like it depends.
You do have to, you do have to be willing to take stuff apart. I mean, here's what a rookie does. A rookie goes into the room, sees a chest of drawers with two drawers in it, like an IKEA nightstand or something. Lots of IKEA furniture in these rooms, by the way. sees a nightstand with two drawers on it. Opens up drawer number one, looks inside, there's nothing in there. Opens up drawer number two, looks inside, oh, there's a key in there. Takes a key out, you know, puts it on the table, closes the drawer. Sounds good, right? No. Horrible. What you need to do is we need to take the drawer and remove it entirely from the chest of drawers and then take the second drawer and then remove it entirely. Because the problems you've now caused are, number one, if you open up the drawer, look and put it back, if something is taped to the underside of the thing, you're not going to find it. If something's taped underneath the drawer, you're not going to find it. If something is on the floor, covered by
below
the chest of drawers,
bottom
below
drawer.
A drawer, you're not going to find it. So you have to take the drawers out. The other thing you've done, if you look in there and you close the drawers, how do all of your other teammates know to not come over?
Waste time.
They'll waste their time one by one by one, opening up the drawer, looking in and closing it again. So take it all out. Look at everything. Get on the ground. Stick your head in the now empty chest of drawers. Look up, look down, look all around. Look behind it. If there's a big sign saying don't move the furniture, if they tell you before you go in, don't move any furniture, fine. But if they don't tell you that, take the thing and pull it away from the wall. There might be something behind it. Look underneath. Look on the underside of all the drawers. And then, for the love of God, don't put it back together. Leave it all out.
There's two kinds of errors, right? There's the seven people all ignoring it, but there's also seven people all finding the same thing, which is also a waste of time. Yeah. Too.
My solution has always been yell really loudly everything that you're doing. Maybe that's not the best thing for everybody. Talk through everything that you are doing, everything you find. If you find something, if you find a combination lock on a safe in something, be like, everybody, I found this safe with a combination lock on it, and I'm putting it here in the table, and the combination lock is four digits. You know, like, talk it out, because there's so many times when somebody will find something and then not say anything, and then like half an hour later, you know, somebody's like, did anybody figure out where to put this combination? And somebody's like, oh, yeah, there's a keypad, and it's, you know, right? It's like, what? You gotta tell us all. You know, you really have to share all of the information with everybody and make sure that not only are you listening to everybody else, but you're also talking through everything in a way that nobody can say, oh, well, I didn't know that was going on. Hear that.
Which is sort of, I mean, related to our general rule at Pub Quiz, too, which is
talk it out.
Don't just say it out loud. Make sure at least one other person on your team heard you say it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, was I looking in your eyes? And did you see my mouth moving when that happened?
Said that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear it.
Be really neat and organized. I mean, one of the things that we kind of developed immediately was have a discard pile. Yeah. Like, if something is just a red herring, you know, is not something that's a clue or just some piece of junk, like, put it all in one corner into one pile. Also, I mean, again, if they give you pens and clipboards, there might be stuff in the pens. You know what I mean? There might be on the clipboards. Okay. There was one game we went into where they you know, put name tags on all of us, and there was stuff in the name tags. You know, that kind of
so
thing.
So sneaky.
Brute force is also something to think about. What I mean by brute force is if you have three digits of a combination lock, you can just try the other ones. If you have two digits of a four-digit, of a four-digit dial number thing, it's only 100 numbers you have to go through.
Right.
You can do that in 2 minutes.
Right.
Like, just have somebody who's not solving the puzzle just try it.
Yeah.
To try to do it, because maybe you can open it up. And also, just keep the big picture in mind. Like, always ask yourself, like, what is it that we're trying to do? Somebody should, at least one person should be looking at what's called the meta puzzle, you know, because typically you go into the room, there's all kinds of stuff, and you're going to find like solutions to six different little puzzles that you're going to enter into a grid. You know what I mean? And then you're going to put them into a grid, and that's going to give you one big, you know, solution. And that's going to let you get into maybe the second room or something like that. Think big picture. Think about what you need. What is it we are trying to do?
Right.
And that's something that you will just figure out through experience. There's a lot of things you're going to learn through experience. What is a good bit of lateral thinking, and what is way too much? You know, like, what is a good, like, oh, this grid is the same size as that grid, and this grid has circles in it, and that grid has letters in it, and then we're going to overlay them, and the circles will be on the letters. Like, that's great. That's really smart. Yeah. But then some people who are just like, okay, we need a 5-letter password, and there's 100 books on the bookshelf.
So I'm
going to look on page 5 of every book and pick the 5th letter on page 5. It's like, that's not possible. Couple other things. If you're working on a puzzle and you're having a hard time, you know, give up. Like, just let somebody else do it. Don't get so ingrained in working on this one puzzle that you're not able to solve that you can't just pass it off to one of your teammates and say, hey, why don't you look at this?
Yeah.
The corollary to that rule is if one of your teammates is like 85% done solving a puzzle, you do not need to stick your nose into the process so that you can feel, well, I helped solve it too. It's like, if they're off to the races, just let them finish it. Go do something else.
And this is where knowing your team, know your know your teammates.
The thing is, like, at almost every puzzle room, you're kind of being tossed into the unknown, and usually there's like 7 puzzles to do at the same time. And it's not a linear, oh, we do this one together and we do this one together. Teams break off, 2 people work on this, 2 people do that, mm-hmm. 2 people mm-hmm. do that. And it's like, it's all happening at once. And so there are times when, like, you don't know what the other team is doing, but right. it's fine. They're on it.
Yeah.
That's if you trust your team.
Yeah. Well, you have
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
And you have to trust your team. And you have to, and you have to really, you also really have to develop it. That's why you have to build your own team.
You know, that's why
you must do this.
Family members aren't always, like, the
might
best.
Might not be good. Nope.
Puzzle solvers.
And honestly, I mean, here's the thing. Escape rooms are exploding in popularity. Not everyone who designs an escape room
right.
should. There are some puzzles that are like, okay, I could explain to you why this is a bad puzzle.
Yeah.
And it's not just the fact that I didn't get it. Like, there's some issues with this puzzle design. That so sometimes you do want to do hints. If you all get together and you agree that you will ask for hints, you know, during the process if you get stuck, the best tip about hints is just make sure you kind of do it earlier. If it's early in the game and you're stuck on something and you're really feeling frustrated about something, just ask for that hint a little bit earlier. Don't wait until 5 minutes, you know, before time is up to ask for your first hint, because
it's going
to
be too late at that point and you're going to be frustrated.
Yeah. But yeah, so those are just some of the things that we've learned.
Know how to use a tape recorder or a tape player. a cassette tape player.
And that happened to you.
Me and
right?
my friend James, we did a rando room. Uh-huh. Like, we thought it was just going to be us two in a room. We're like, that's fine. Then we got paired these 15-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
Very sweet kids, very smart kids. But at the end, for the meta, you had to play a tape. You unlock a tape player, and then you had this tape you found earlier. They didn't know how to use it, because they've never encountered a cassette tape before. And it was very cute.
I'm sure they
and they're putting it on a different way, work. And we're like, no, it's okay. We'll put it in. They're like, we don't know what this is. We're like, it's okay.
So basically, escape rooms are designed so that you do not have to bring in any like esoteric outside knowledge. I hope that you
also
enjoy
we're
doing
really intense.
Rooms.
If you didn't,
we're super
I mean,
intense.
We're, we are.
Yeah,
super
don't do them with
it.
Us. Yeah. Like, it's not. It's like, it's
like, well, you were like, we don't like to ask for hints. It was like you easily could have guessed that was gonna be the.
We're pretty intense.
Yep.
All right. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learn a lot of stuff about escape rooms, about octopodes or octopuses and octopies, escape movies, and also fix names. Make sure to look up where your fix name is in the air, in the sky. And you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. See you soon.
Bye. Bye.